It's 10 a.m.
Wake up time!
And you're listening to Utah's most listened to sports radio show. This is Hans Olsen and Scotty G. Presented by WCF Insurance. Reminding you to be careful out there. On 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Hey, welcome in. 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network out and about today. Lovely Provo. We are outside the BYU media facility, and we're excited. It's BYU Football Media Day. I'm sure you're probably going to hear a few people reference Hans Olsen not being here today. Well, just know, Hans scheduled this vacation like back in March, and this bad boy got scheduled just a few weeks ago. But we've got a lot of people to talk to throughout the day today. In fact, Trevor Maddich, former BYU great, is going to join us coming up here in just a moment. You know what? Look, a little football talk, a little college football fix is going to get your mind off what ails you right now, and that might be a Jazz loss last night. Lloyd, you and I both felt like that was there was some cause for concern, maybe a bit of a letdown, not just with the players but with the fan base, thinking no Kawhi Leonard, that means we might get a W, and that certainly wasn't the case last night.
Yeah, the rest of these guys are scrubs. Nope. They're actually still pretty good.
Nope. No way, no how. And props to Paul George, too. Look, Paul's public enemy number one. That fan base has been on him for several years now, and he was tremendous last night. And it just seemed like whoever drove, and I thought DJ said this well, and they addressed it with Joe Ingles, and I'm sure we'll, if we have a free moment, we'll replay some of that Joe Ingles conversation from earlier this morning. But when you're getting around your perimeter defender and you're getting into lane and you're drawing guys to close out and you're pitching it out to the outside, and it's pretty easy for Terrence Mann and Reggie Jackson and Marcus Morris. I mean, it's almost like they're in a pregame warm-up shooting threes. When you don't have a guy within 3 feet of you and you're able to knock down threes, it's
Reggie Jackson was nails. Every time that thing got within three or five or whatever, dude hit a three.
Yeah. And to me, like,
all series long, to be honest with you. Well, not all series long, but in those two games in L.A., that guy has been a stud.
It's concerning, to say the least, and there's not a lot of time to try to figure it out too. And you go to LA for game six, a place that you haven't played well and frankly haven't shot well. But you and I, Lloyd, we were talking last night and going back and forth when the Jazz shoot 10 threes in the first quarter and lead by one. And I tweeted out, I'm like, read into that what you will. It was just my way of saying, like, this is a problem. You had one of your most explosive offensive performances in recent history, in playoff history, in a quarter, and you're only up by 1 point. You score 64 points in the first half of a game, and you're only up by four. I mean, there were just a lot of things that just led you to believe that the three-point shooting you know is going to come back. You're not going to shoot 72% for three for an entire game. But you know that's going to drop down, and you got the Clippers getting everything they want at the rim, everything. They're making their mid-range shots, and then, of course, kicking out for wide-open threes. Their ball movement was great. Their spacing was great. Their offense was great. They have figured out the puzzle of the Utah Jazz defense. Now it's time for the Jazz to try to go the other way, but it's a problem, Lloyd. It's a big problem.
It was funny. I went out real quick outside, out my front yard real quick to do something. Right after the first quarter ended, my neighbor says, "How are the Jazz doing, Lloyd?" I said, "Well, they just made like 10 threes in that first quarter." He goes, "Wow." I'm like, "Yeah, but they're only up one." And he's like, "Huh." Like, yeah. I'm like, "Yeah, I don't know what that means, but probably not good." I mean, if they should at halftime doing it, shooting as well as they did. I mean, Bogey couldn't miss. I mean, he missed one, but that it felt like they should have been up 16 at least.
Yeah.
15, 16, right around there. In fact, I would have thought if they were only up maybe 9, 10, I would be like, "Eh, that's not very good." But to be only up 5 at halftime, It's like, whoa, they what I told you, like I said, you and I were going back and forth, and I said, they're not. There's no way the Jazz could keep this up.
No,
there's no way you're going to shoot at this clip.
And they didn't. And the Clippers had a lot to do with it too. And look, there's a lot of other issues involved. I mean, Donovan's not right, and we can tell that.
He looked gassed.
He looked gassed and looked hurt. And those last shot attempts where he knows he's got to be the guy, and he's not even grazing rim at that point.
Yeah, three or four air balls.
Mike Conley still out. I mean, it's and this is the thing: if the Jazz lose this series, and I don't want to go there yet, but it's just it's going to be one of the bigger gut punches to the Jazz and its fan base in recent history, just because it all looked kind of laid out for you. I mean, and I'm not even talking about the Kawhi Leonard injury. I'm talking about no LeBron. The Nets are banged up. Like the super teams that usually you think that, you know, when the playoffs started, we're looking at a Lakers-Nets finals and everybody else is just there for show. And the Lakers get bounced in the first round, and then the Nets have their issues. And it just feels like every now and then, even like with Toronto a couple of years ago when they won the NBA title, they probably don't win it if Klay Thompson it doesn't get hurt and Kevin Durant don't get hurt. Like that kind of was a special year that laid out perfectly for them. When Detroit won it in 04, it just kind of laid out perfectly. These opportunities don't happen very often for teams to kind of sneak in there and really challenge for a title when in normal years it's kind of your same old, year after year after year. And, you know, because like how many years in a row did we have Cleveland and LeBron and Golden State and Steph in the NBA Finals? And was it 3-4 years in a row? It's just because that's who we expected. Those are the best players, and the best players usually end up winning or challenging for a title. And this year wasn't the case. And so that's what's really going to hurt. If the Jazz can't go on and win this series and win two in a row, which, by the way, I think they're more than capable of doing, especially if they're going to get and you don't want to pin your hopes on it because you just don't know how those hamstring injuries are going to go. But if they can get Mike Conley back for maybe Game 6 or maybe even Game 7, if the Jazz can force a Game 7, it's not out of the realm of possibility. I know there's a lot of doom and gloom out there, but if they don't win this thing, the gnashing of teeth is going to be very real and, frankly, understandable too. Like, I get it. And so it's tough, and I understand the anger and the animosity on Twitter right now, because if you're a true fan, I get it. I get it. But Lloyd, it was tough to watch, and I hope that you can find a way to turn this thing around, and they can. But you got to go to L.A. and get a win, and the Jazz have not shot the ball well in L.A. in this series.
Which is going to be more difficult because they're loading up with their fans now.
Oh, yeah.
Now they're full capacity.
Yep.
Now it's like a normal year. It's back to normal right now, yep, is what it feels like, and that's going to be tough.
Yeah, it's going to be a difficult one for sure, and it's got to be, obviously you got to find a way to turn the page here and move on. And I like, look, PK asked the question. I think it's a really good question to Joe Ingles earlier today, and just asked him, hey, look, how hard is it to to kind of get your mind right after a loss like that? And Joe just said, well, we don't have a choice. We have to. And you understand. And I love Joe's honesty in this, because he said, the NBA career, look, if you have a great NBA career in terms of years, what, 9-10 years? Some guys get a little bit more than that, but if you get 10 years in the league, you've had a tremendous run. And in the grand scheme of your life expectancy, that's not a lot of time. I mean, it goes by quick, and these opportunities don't happen very often. And I get the vibe from Joe, and I get the vibe from the team that there's a lot of fight left in them. And I would anticipate a really good game coming up on Friday, and a game that hopefully the Jazz can win, and then we get Game 7 coming up on Sunday at Vivint Arena. And if that happens, then that place is really going to be rocking and really going to be a lot of fun. So, all right, we'll talk a lot of Jazz throughout the day today. We are down here at BYU Media Day. Coming up next, you're going to hear from Trevor Matich as we continue on right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.
Tomorrow, you or die game. This is what I'm made of. This is for the throne and the kingdom.
Oh, Donovan Mitchell!
Do or die, do it now if you believe it. The Utah Jazz, the LA Clippers.
They'll show up for this game.
Game 6. The Jazz Live pregame show kicks off at 7 with tip-off at 8 on your home for Utah Jazz basketball. 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, Hans on vacation. He'll be back with us coming up on Monday. We're down here at BYU Football Media Day. Whole slew of coaches and players expected to join us throughout the day. We had a bunch already with DJ and PK. Joe Ingles also with DJ and PK, so we might circle back on that coming up a little bit later on in the program. I love this day because, and I know BYU, sometimes people are like, why are we doing this in June? Well, why not? I mean, I've never been to a point where I'm like, well, I don't want to talk about football. Well, of course we don't.
Oh, I hate football. Really?
It's too soon. What are we doing? Well, we're talking football is what we're doing. Calm down, everybody. It's a long summer. We like to talk about football. By the way, Mountain West Conference Media Days were announced. That's going to be, I believe, July 21st and 22nd. And Lloyd, I don't know. Sometimes, I don't know if I get on the Pac-12's bad side. Sometimes I get their email. Sometimes I don't. And so I have not seen anything on Pac-12 Media Day as of yet. Have you?
Nope. I think you're still must be on their bad side, and I must be as well, because I have not either.
So I just don't think it's been announced as of yet. Usually it's right around that same time as the Mountain West, like July, somewhere between July 20th and July 25th. So every other conference seems like they're doing it in person. I would assume that the Pac-12 would do that as well. But
they're progressive.
That's true. That's true. You know, I was talking to somebody down here at BYU in their media department, and we're kind of going back and forth on what we think might stay in terms of COVID and what might go away. Because I do think there are certain things that you can take away from some good practices. Look, obviously COVID sucked. I'm not saying anything. But, you know, out of necessity and out of change and needing to do different things, sometimes new innovations come from it. And I don't know about you, Lloyd, but I like the Zoom press conferences after games. I like the ability to be able to chat with more players and not have to send a crew down here to Provo, you know, to get media availability. I think the Zoom thing's probably going to be around to stay a little bit.
No, I think it's worked well. It's, I mean, heck, as soon as they're available, we're able to put it on air. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's something we've never been able to do before. It's been great. It's been helpful, and I don't see it changing anytime soon either.
Well, and so, I think there's some good practices, and I think the ability for media to be able to talk to players and coaches after an away game, you know, and some of the things that come in that regard, I think are certainly helpful. Speaking of Jazz media availability, you'll hear from Quinn Snyder coming up a little bit later on this afternoon. Sometime either in the 12 or 1 o'clock hour, I think you'll be able to hear from Quinn Snyder, so he'll address the media. And, you know, it's always interesting because you heard Quinn after the game last night, and obviously certainly, frustrated by what we saw last night. And then you get a day to decompress, watch some film, and kind of take a closer deep dive on what's going on. And sometimes you see some things that maybe you did not see or in the heat of the moment of the game. So it'll be interesting to hear from Quinn Snyder coming up a little bit later on. But I'm having a hard time going back to last night. For a team that really hangs its hat on its defense, there was just so many defensive liabilities last night. I mean, look, Paul George getting into the lane, he's going to do that to a lot of people. But Reggie Jackson driving, Terrence Mann driving, Marcus Morris hitting threes from the outside. I mean, these are things that these guys have not shown the ability to do consistently, which really forced the Jazz to collapse in the paint, and everybody wants to know why were there so many wide-open three-point shots. Well, if you drive, and this is why the Jazz have had so many great three-point opportunities, when you get guys who can create and get into lane like Donovan Mitchell can do when he's healthy, when Mike Conley can do when he's out there, and Jordan Clarkson can do, and you're able to pass out of the paint, you're probably going to, especially when, you know, we talk about the blender so many times. It's just there's so many opportunities out there when this offense is clicking based on the drive and kick. And right now you're seeing the Clippers able to do that with just exceedingly tremendous ball movement and getting wide open looks. The Jazz have had that for a good chunk of the regular season. It's not there right now. No Mike Conley. Donovan Mitchell that's hampered. And so I think there's a reason why there's a little bit of level of negativity out there because, you know, is Mike Conley going to be back tomorrow? Probably not. I don't know. Mike thinks he has a chance to be back before the end of the series. But, frankly, I think we're at a point now, especially when he talked about re-injuring that hamstring between games two and three, and Mike's never been back.
Feels like it reset the clock a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And the clock seems to be a bare minimum of 2 weeks. So, you know, you look at the situation there and what that's going to lead to, and it's hard to imagine that Mike's going to be back. Now, look, I'll take him at his word, and he thinks that he's got a chance to be back before the end of the series. But again, I think we're looking at a situation where I don't want to say we'll believe it when we see it. It's just history of hamstrings and the time it takes to get past them. I just don't know if it's going to happen or not.
He's going to try. I have no doubt he's going to try. He's going to try to be out there for Friday. Would be my guess. I don't think he wants to wait till and try to see if it makes it to Sunday. I got to imagine he's going to give it a try to try to get out there for Friday. Whether that's going to happen once they have shoot around, I don't know. I don't know how. I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum. You know, hamstrings are just—they're tough. We don't know hamstrings, groins, whatever. They are. You just don't know how they're going to react. And if it tightens right back up, you're in the same boat.
Yeah. And so, like, I'm with you, Lloyd. I think, and I'm not putting any blame on any blame whatsoever on Mike Conley. Like,
Nor should anybody.
Nor should anybody. Like, I will stand up for him because those hamstrings are difficult. We saw how James Harden looked out there. It's not a good thing to push. But I'm also with you where he's probably looking at this game six and saying, look, if we lose this game, we're done. So.
And it doesn't really matter. Right.
Yeah. And here's the thing. It's not all Mike Conley's call, too. I mean, you got to go through the Jazz positions. They've got to sign off on something like that. Like, it's not something that you can just say, all right, let's go.
Well, it looks like Mike just doesn't want to go. No, that's not the case.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a difficult spot. And the fact that this is 2 years in a row that the Jazz have lost three in a row. You know, look, they were up 3-1 against the Nuggets last year, and the Nuggets reeled off three in a row and won the series. Jazz were up 2-0 in this series, have lost three in a row, and may end up losing four in a row and losing the series in a pretty heartbreaking fashion after having control after the first two games. But, like, I get all of that, and I understand the frustration, and you got to imagine that's going to really stick in the craw of this team.
By the way, I mean, we've talked about Conley. You don't want to put a guy out there if he's going to hurt the team, right?
Yeah.
You know, is it going to be beneficial for the team, or is it going to make the team, you know, suffer? I thought I didn't think Donovan Mitchell was able. He looked so distraught about the ankle. He was uncomfortable. I thought it obviously hurt him on the push off or the jump shot. It hurt him on defense. I thought he might have been a little bit of a liability last night, just because I feel like that ankle was really bothering him.
It's an interesting point.
What do you think? I mean, was he more of a detriment last night to the? I mean, it's Donovan Mitchell. He's your superstar, so I can't. It's hard to say that he's a detriment to the team.
I think the threat of him being there is important. And I'll go back to what Thurl Bailey said about this yesterday with James Harden. Because, look, James Harden, I don't think, helped the Nets win that game. But Thurl disagreed a little bit. Said, look, the threat of him being out there forces defenses to understand, forces defenses to honor the threat of what he can do on any given moment. And so I think Donovan Mitchell has to be out there if he can. But, you know, to your point, Lloyd, I don't know if you caught the comments from Quinn Snyder. I don't know if it was you that tweeted this out or if it was somebody else on staff did that said it sounded pretty ominous when Quinn after the game said we're going to, you know, take a look at him after the game. Our medical staff's going to look and we'll make a decision from there because we've got to understand that Donovan's interests and his health and well-being is first and foremost our number one priority. And I thought that was a pretty telling statement that, like, you know, according to Quinn Snyder, it's not a foregone conclusion. He's going to be out there for game six. Now, I think it is, because I don't think Donovan will put up with missing a game with his team down 3-2 and still a, you know, reasonable chance of coming back and winning that series. I think you'll have a major issue on your hands if you tell him to sit. But if he sits, it would have to be Donovan's call, because I don't think the Jazz have any interest in going through what they went through after game one against Memphis by sitting him out. So it's a weird situation. I mean, it's not a weird situation. It's just an unfortunate situation, I guess is the right term.
They've been healthy all season long. It's just happening at a bad time for them. I mean, the Conley thing, that's why, I mean, people have been a little, you know, roughing up Conley a little bit. And I'm like, the guy has given me no reason to think that he's out there dogging it and he wants to sit out. I mean, the guy's in a contract here. Of course he wants to get out there and play.
Yeah. And look, he probably looks at it from a standpoint of he got close. He played in a Western Conference Finals once with Memphis. But he knows the clock's ticking on his career.
Yeah, you don't think
he
wants
this
bad?
Yeah.
He does. So.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. It's somewhat disappointing. I know Jazz fans can – I totally understand their concern about the whole thing, but the problem is more than just losing a game and potentially losing a series. The problem more is, for me at least, is that these windows just don't happen very often. And a window to win an NBA title when LeBron's out, when Kevin Durant's, you know, the only member of the Nets that seems to be healthy at this point, and even he's coming off an Achilles. Like, that's the thing that's really disconcerting, because those windows, they open just for a moment and then they slam right back shut. Because I'm sure the Lakers will add another superstar and LeBron will get back to being healthy and Anthony Davis will be healthy and they might just, you know, completely obliterate the league next year. Or the Nets are completely healthy and they'll obliterate the league next year. But right now, that's just not the case. And so there's a window there. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if the Suns end up winning an NBA title this year, because once they deal with the COVID issues with Chris Paul, they're healthy, they're ready to go. And, I mean, right now I think the Suns are right there with a chance to win an NBA title just because they'll win the war of attrition. They're just not dealing with crazy injuries.
They, like the Jazz, had this window of where it's opened up for them. Like, it's there for the Suns. I mean, you're spot on. Like, they're healthy. It's all, I mean, outside of Chris Paul, but it's all looking like the Suns, this could be their year.
Yeah. And never, and look, you're a fan of the NFL like I am, never underestimate a elder player making a run for what could be the last time. And things just kind of lay out for him. And look, I'm a Broncos fan, but I'm willing to admit things just kind of magically laid out for Peyton Manning in that last year with Denver. Jerome Bettis, things just kind of fall into place for him. And Ray Lewis, when we knew it was his last year, things just kind of fall into place for these guys. And that thing might be happening with Chris Paul right now. You know, and I'm not saying there's some crazy conspiracy theory, but for some reason, like, you know, the basketball gods kind of align, or the football gods, and they're like, okay, we're going to lay out a path for you to go out on top. So it seems to be the case right now with Phoenix Suns, even though Chris Paul can't seem to avoid catching the Rona. All right, Hans and Scotty here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Coming up next, what you may have missed, we're live here at BYU Media Day. Anticipate a lot of players and coaches rolling through here right here on The Zone Sports Network.
The Big Show. The Big Show with Jake Scott and Gordon Monson.
David Locke with us. How was it traveling with the team again and getting out there and calling it on the road?
It was great. To have your employer respect what you do and give you a chance to be great. I thank the Jazz tremendously for having the respect to broadcasters and the job we do to allow us to do it the best we can and bring the fans the best game that we could. Sometimes despair brings you the biggest joy, right? And honestly, walking into the Staples Center was a really emotional moment. I didn't know if we'd ever do it again. This last 2 weeks, being in the arena when the crowd erupted in game five against Memphis, to be in a full house against the Clippers, and to be back on the road, being able to do your job. These have been some of my most favorite teams I've ever called in my life.
Catch the Big Show weekdays from 2 to 7. Presented by Big O Tires, the team you trust. On 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Let's go.
You don't have time to watch every game or read every story. Fortunately,
We do. Here's what you may have missed on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
.97.5/1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard. Hey, by the way, you've seen the video of the Phoenix Sun fan punching out the Denver Nugget fan, and then yelled out "Suns in four." Devin Booker has sought him out, found him. His name is Nick McKellar, a lifelong Suns fan who now lives in Denver. Booker and the Suns are going to send him a signed Booker jersey and provide him with tickets to a conference finals game.
Like, wait, what?
They're essentially rewarding this dude for just punching the lights out.
I saw the video, but wait, they're giving him finals tickets?
Western Conference finals tickets, yeah.
For punching somebody?
For punching a Denver Nugget fan out, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Now, here's the thing. To his credit, he didn't throw the first punch. The Nuggets guy threw the first punch. And then McKellar said he was just having fun, he thought, with some good-natured trash talking, and that he fought back only to defend himself. The recordings kind of back that up because the Nuggets fan was the first to swing, and then he took a step back and started laying into him. So there you go. It's kind of interesting to see how violent and how quickly that turned.
See, it's kind of crazy. Well, see, I could see if that happened here, I could see like the Jazz organization giving the team that the guy that got punched out the tickets.
Yeah.
Like the opposing
fan
tickets, but yeah, okay.
I don't, you know, it's just like, I don't know if that sets a good precedence. Like, hey, you start swinging haymakers and I'm going to get some tickets and get a signed jersey. But again, to his point, I mean, he didn't throw the first punch. He was just defending himself, but I did like at the very end when he yelled out, "Suns in four."
Yeah, you can't really come back on that.
No. Not really.
Not much you can say about that. It's like, yeah. Didn't pull out much fight. You're right. Suns in four.
Tonight, the Nets will take on the Bucks. And the other game that was quite interesting was the Atlanta Hawks and the 76ers. What is going on with Philadelphia? They lose game four after giving up a big lead. And then last night in game five, they're up by... How big was that lead in that? About what, 21?
26.
26.
26 points.
And the Hawks come back and outscore the 76ers 40-19 in the fourth quarter. Trae Young with 39 points and 7 assists. And, look, if you're a Jazz fan, you can be a little salty about today, but just know at least you're not the Hawks or the 76ers, because that was just flat-out miserable what we saw there. I mean, just blown away by – how bad of a meltdown that was by the Philadelphia 76ers. So you got Joel Embiid, who's hurt. The Atlanta Hawks, who had a fun time putting Simmons on the free throw line because he couldn't hit anything. And just like that, the lead evaporates. And Atlanta now leads that game 3-2 and has a ton of momentum coming into game number 6 in that series. So, I mean, there you go, Lloyd. It's just, this has been a weird playoffs for sure. It just, you never know what to expect from game to game. That's why, honestly, I know people are thinking, okay, the Jazz might be done here, but I don't know. This one thing we know about this year's NBA playoffs is that we know nothing about this year's NBA playoffs because everything seems to get turned upside down at any given moment.
Momentum can shift so fast. Like, it can shift in a quarter, and all of a sudden it's going the other way. It really can.
Yeah.
And the Jazz have shown that they can put up points in a hurry.
That's why, I mean, all the way until the end, you're thinking, well, you know, as the clocks gets down to you know, 8 minutes left in the fourth, 6 minutes left in the fourth, and there, you know, maybe there's still a 10-point lead. You're like, well, there's the Jazz could still go on a barrage here. And, you know, even 3 minutes left, you're like, there's still a chance because this offense is so lethal. And the shots just, they didn't fall. They didn't have it. But they can, and they could.
And that's the thing. Like, it could happen. It could turn and change just like that, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if it happens. Look, it wouldn't surprise me. Look, you know, we're off tomorrow because of Juneteenth and an NBA holiday. It wouldn't surprise me, Lloyd, if we're back on Monday breaking down the Phoenix Suns with the Jazz winning two in a row. Wouldn't surprise me one bit. Wouldn't surprise me if the Jazz lose tomorrow at all. Like, nothing, I think, can I can honestly say there's nothing that could happen over the next 3 or 4 days to be like, whoa, did not see that at all. Like, frankly, it wouldn't surprise me if the Jazz won Game 6 and the Clippers come to Salt Lake City and win Game 7. Like, there's nothing at any point here where I look at and say, well, shoot, Lloyd, didn't see that one at all. That came out of nowhere. Holy smokes. The one thing all I know that we can take to the bank here is that when Hans Olsen's gone, the Jazz lose games.
Yeah,
so
if you want to put all your hate, put it at him. He did it.
I mean, I think that's kind of where it's all at right now.
We need him back.
Yeah.
We need him back.
So if you want to get grumpy at somebody, if you want to get fired up and be a little upset at what's going on.
Hey, before the whole Olsen clan left, Jazz were up 2-0.
That's what I'm saying.
2-0.
That's exactly what I'm saying here. So, I mean, I think it's just a matter of trying to figure out exactly what.
Did you ever see the movie Celtic Pride?
A long, long time ago.
You know when the fans they change seats because the jinx.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, switch back. That's what I feel like has to happen right now. Like everything needs to go. Whatever happened before the what was happening during that 2-0. Needs a switchback, whether it's switching seats, whatever. Get back to doing whatever it was that helped get you there. If you went ahead and washed those lucky underwear, don't do it again.
Don't do it.
Don't
yeah,
do
exactly.
it.
All right, we'll get back to the Jazz coming up here in just a moment. But joining us now, new offensive line coach Daryl Funk here at BYU, kind enough to join us. Coach, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, look, it's June. We're still 2 months away from the football season starting, but it's never too soon to talk football, man.
No,
love it.
Absolutely. Good to be here. Good to have this day going.
Well, let's talk about your group because you've got an awesome room with some real studs in that. Talk about how your expectations and what you expect out of that group this year.
Well, I'm really fired up about the group. I know we lost some good players out of that room that are, you know, going to play on Sundays and everything. So the natural reaction is like, wow, you lost three guys, really good guys. But we've got some good guys that have played a lot of meaningful plays and started a lot of games. And then, you know, I think with our group, it has to start with James Empey up front. I mean, he's got the most starts in the room. He's like a coach on the field, knows the offense in and out, you know, just a terrific, humble young man that, like I said, it's easy to say, well, guys like a coach on the field, but not every player, in my experience, not every player that's started a number of games is a great teacher to the guys behind him. They do it by example, but James is unbelievable. I just listen to his coaching points to the guys behind him, the things that he offers when we do film study. He's just a great kid. So I know he's poised for a great season and excited about him. You know, we work on the outside coming in. You know, Blake Freeland's played a lot of football. But what's crazy about Blake, he's played a lot of football. Blake's best years are in front of him. He's not even, in my opinion, as solid a player as he is, he's got unlimited potential in different things. He's just going to get better and better and better. And so we're excited about him. Right now we've got him over at that left side. He's played mostly on the right. But Blake's got he had a great spring, and he's, you know, in the summer working hard, just a great kid too. Harris LeChance, he's the one that I thought he had, of the group, I thought he had one of the better springs. Mm-hmm. You know, he's played a lot of football, you know, not been one of the starters in different things, but he's played left, he's played right, he's played some guard. But I thought he was terrific in the spring, very consistent at right tackle, and I think he's going to really turn some heads, you know, in terms of his consistency and how he's going to play. So those guys are there, and then you know, Braden Kimes, another tackle that's going to that people are going to be talking about as we move forward. He's got some bloodlines. His dad played in the league. He's a really good man, big guy, all that. But Braden, what a great kid. And he's just, you know, he's a young guy that is another tackle for us there. Now, you know, mentioning other guys that have started games, Clark Barrington at left guard's got, I think he's at 10, 12 starts, whatever it is there. He's another one. I think he's kind of beyond his years. He's still a young player, but he's got a maturity about him. He had a really terrific spring, too. Missed a couple days with just something minor, no big deal. But he's looking good this summer. And then we'll have a battle. We have basically three guys initially. There'll be more as the guys develop. Battling for those guard spots, Clark being one of them at left. You know, he's started a lot of games. But Connor Pay and Joe Tukuafo are going to be battling at the right guard spot. I know Joe's listed on there as the backup to Empey, which he is, and Connor Pay can play a real good center as well. But Joe and Connor and Clark will all be battling to see, you know, who starts on the inside there. So I'm excited about the experience. And then we've got other guys, Seth Willis, Campbell Barrington, are going to be developing in different things. We got some other guys we're still, you know, that haven't played yet that are, you know, either just getting here or redshirt freshmen, whatever. So I'm happy with the progress of the group.
How much responsibility do you put on MP throughout the course of the game? Is he making calls at the line? Is that some of the things that he's responsible for?
Yeah, and of course, you know, we're just talking spring because I wasn't here last year. But as a general rule, places that I've been, it's the best system if your center is the one that can do all that. And James can do any of that. I mean, he can call everything. Obviously, quarterbacks in a system can trump you, and they can either change a play or they can change a call. But James is going to, he's going to be the one that's spearheading all those calls. And then what happens, the way that I've always done it, is once he makes his call, then our tackles are the ones that kind of get the edges set in terms of that. But if I wanted to, I could have all the other four guys not say a word and James say everything. But it takes too long to tell for him to say, okay, you guys do this on the left. So we do it that way. But he's super intelligent and just says, you know, one, he's intelligent anyway. Two, he comes from a coaching family. Three, he's started 34, 36 games, whatever it is. You add all that up together, and then just his knowledge for the game. He's. I'm looking forward to working with him in that capacity.
Let's talk about your path to get here to BYU. What was it like, and what was it about the school that said that's where I want to go coach?
Well, when I first got involved with the job, I didn't. I mean, Aaron and I had always coached against each other. Kalani and I had always coached against each other. Elisa as well, and so I didn't actually had never worked with anyone here. But the connections that I had, not only competing against each other, because you gain a measure of respect against your opponents, but three or four people that I'm really close with in the profession, mentor-type guys, you know, good friends that I've coached with, they really meshed well with the ones that Kalani knew.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of so that kind of got it going. Even with Tom, I two guys that Tom Homo had working for him.
Wow.
And he's a coach, had put in plugs. So that kind of got it going. But Aaron and I just kept talking. And the first time it was about an hour. And then maybe 4 or 5 days later it was a half hour. Then it was an hour and a half. And I just felt really aligned with him in terms of the way he approaches the game, his coaching style, from what I could gather. I knew he was looking for someone that had some experience and had been there, done that type of thing. Not that I ever pretend, because it's not the way I am, act like I have all the answers, because no one has all the answers. And as soon as you get to thinking that way, you sink pretty fast to this profession. But that being said, we just found, at least from my standpoint, every time we talked, it was just a different comfort level. Not only the X's and O's, not only that, but also kind of the philosophy for how we'd like to build the lines. I played against the great BYU lines in the past. I've coached against them. I always have taken in my career two or three offenses that I've studied in the off season, and I can't tell you how many times I've watched the BYU line. For as long as I've been aware of college football, not only have great players, but they played so well together.
Yeah.
From my first exposure to BYU when I was at Colorado State in the 80s to now. But that's kind of how it happened. Moved a little bit slower than you'd like. But once it happened, here I am, and I had about 3 weeks before spring ball, and just hit the ground running, and it's been real fun to work with these guys ever since.
Well, Coach, excited to see your offensive line. My co-host, who's normally here, played here at BYU, and he's an offensive line nut, like loves everything about the offensive line. So I'm sure we'll have some more conversations down the line, but appreciate you hanging
Absolutely.
Out with us.
Appreciate it.
Thanks so much,
have
Coach.
Have a good day.
Appreciate it. Darryl Funk, the new offensive line coach here at BYU, right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. As we get ready for more conversations down here, we're going to chat with Trevor Maddich here in just a moment. But tell you what, this is a kind of a fun day for us. We love chatting college football. We love kind of breaking this stuff down. And that offensive line, by the way, has a chance to be really, really good. Obviously, with James Empey anchoring that offensive line, with Harris LeChance and Brake Freeland on the outsides. Just be ready. You're going to hear a lot of these guys' names pop up here in the top 60 and 60 coming up. So there's going to be a lot of interesting names being thrown out there, but I like this BYU offensive line a lot. I really think they have a chance to be really, really good this year. Obviously, last year's group was really, really special, and they have a chance to add to it again this year going throughout the season. And of course, when you're bringing in a new quarterback, whether it be Jaren Hall or Baylor Romney, whoever gets to start there, it's always nice when you have a nice safety blanket there at the offensive line. All right, Trevor Maddich joining us, one of our favorite conversations. How are you, sir?
I am great. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Good to catch up with you. COVID sucked for all of us, but not being able to hang out with you last summer, that wasn't any fun, man. It's good to have you back down here.
It's great to be back with everybody. It really is.
So let's talk about your expectations. Obviously, this BYU team was so good last year. Level of competition wasn't at a high level, but hey, you know, they played a great schedule. Tom did a tremendous job putting that schedule together. They won a ton of games. Zach Wilson's now a high NFL draft pick. What are your expectations for this year's team?
I think this year's team has a chance to show that this program is on the rise, not just as a team last year, but as a program going forward. Because you look at, they put 12 guys into NFL camps this summer from last year's team. Five of them drafted, including the number two pick of the draft, quarterback Zach Wilson. So typically, a team like BYU will fall way back from that.
Yeah.
But this BYU team will be replacing those guys with mostly experienced players who have played a lot of football, who have started games, a lot of games in some cases, and are experienced and confident and ready to go. So you talk about the offensive line. You're talking with Coach Funk. I mean, they've got to replace three starters that went off to the league. But the guys that will be replacing them have all started games, played a lot of football, and they're not rebuilding there. They're reloading.
Yeah.
And so this team has competition for the last several years at most positions at a high level, which means that it has a chance to pick up where they left off last year and be another very solid team.
I love your opinions on not just BYU but all of college football, so I got to pick your brain on a couple things. College football playoff, some of the ideas of changing that up, do you like those?
I do. I came to dislike strongly, I think, if you want to put it as gently as possible, the 14 playoff.
Yeah.
Not necessarily because of limited access, but because of other things that it did to college football. One was that it diminished the value of conference championship races. Mm-hmm. You know, you got the Pac-12 and the Big 12 some years. The front runners would lose a game or two early, and they were out of the national conversation, like they didn't matter. And that relegated conference championship races to being basically regional sideshows with very little national impact. And I think that's bad for college football. Going to 12, where they're talking about now in the most recent proposal, having the six highest-ranked conference champions get an automatic berth, means that you could lose a couple games early. You might have a freshman quarterback. You might have a new coach. Maybe you had some injuries early. But you could come back, and in the conference championship game, having lost three games already, beat that undefeated team that's ranked in the top five, and you get the automatic berth. So the conference championship race is still incredibly important on the national level everywhere. Whereas with the 14 playoff, nah, not really. The other thing that I disliked about the 4-team race was that college football on the national level is seen through the lens of the playoff.
Yeah.
And as time goes on, most of the conversation is geared toward the teams that are most likely to make it. And the farther you get into the season, the more it distills around Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, and then a couple of other teams that might have a chance, Georgia, et cetera. And they're getting most of the conversation. Well, that hurts other programs in terms of recruiting, in terms of donations, all kinds of things. By having 12, you have a lot of teams that in November will have a chance to get into that playoff with an at-large bid. And I think that they'll be in the conversation, and it's better for college football to have more cross-pollination that way all across every region of the sport.
In terms of, and this is what I like, and I hope they stick to their guns on this, is that I love the fact it's like, hey, we're taking the top six conference champions, not one ACC, one, you know, like look, last year, if you look at the numbers, Coastal Carolina would have been in. Cincinnati would have been in.
Yeah.
The Pac-12 would not have gotten an automatic bid. Now, I'm sure, you know, out of the top 12, maybe another team sneaks in, but that's not a given at this point. I'd like the fact that there's still some uncertainty and the G5 access or BYU's access is still greatly increased. All you got to do is break into that top 12.
And it makes the recruiting pitch more powerful at more places.
Yes.
Because a lot of schools that are top 15 programs, for example, wouldn't be able to realistically say, yeah, we have a good chance to make the playoff, right? Like if you're the ACC, you've got to get over the Clemson hump, right?
Yeah.
So it's just not, but now they'll be able to make that pitch. More schools will be able to have meet the goals of more recruits to have a chance at getting into the playoff, a chance at winning the national championship. And that's a real important thing that I think is important to consider.
The other thing I wanted to touch on is the one free transfer. A fan?
Yeah, because I have to be.
I'm with you.
Yeah, it's like compensating players, right?
Yeah.
You know, now we've got this name, image, and likeness thing going. We don't know exactly what it will look like, but, you know, we're moving towards the players being able to get some compensation in some ways. But I had a lot of trouble always telling an 18-year-old coming out of high school with a skill that's in demand in the entertainment industry, which college football is, that they can't maximize their market value. Because people like me had some nostalgia for some vision of amateurism that may or may not have ever existed. Mm-hmm. Who am I to tell that kid that he could be making $100,000 to sign and $50,000 a year, but I don't want you to do that because it makes me feel different about your program, right?
Yeah.
How can I tell that kid that? At the same time, you start to compensate players, and all kinds of things change. And so I understand that it comes down to, you know, just what you're going to value the most. But when you look at – I'm sorry, you asked me specifically about –
The transfer. Yeah. But you can roll that into the NLI,
but it's
too.
It's the same thing about the transfer. Because how am I going to tell a kid that goes to a place and maybe he feels like he made a mistake, it wasn't what he thought, they have a new coaching staff, whatever. No, you're stuck there. Why? Because I don't want to have to follow you around college football, right? How do I tell him that? Now, I get it that it'll cause lots of problems, because you'll have a lot of players that'll tell coaches, hey, you play me more or I'm going to transfer.
Yeah.
I'm gone, right? So now how does that affect things? It affects the way roster management it does, all kinds of new problems and issues for coaches. But it does open up opportunities for players as long as they don't abuse the system. Right now there are so many players in the portal that think that they're going to be in high demand that aren't going to have a scholarship anywhere.
Yeah.
Right? And so that should shake out as time goes on. But overall, I have a whole lot of trouble telling people that you can't maximize your opportunity, that you aren't free to make your own mistakes or make your own good decisions. How can I tell that kid that? And I keep defaulting to that position, that you've got to convince me that we have to take away rights of that player because it's better for the overall good of the sport. And I have a whole lot of trouble getting over that hump.
I know I got to cut you loose here in a couple of minutes, but I want to get your thoughts on just what kind of job Kalani Sitake has done here throughout the COVID year and playing as an independent. I think it's one of the toughest jobs in America, frankly, and I think he's done a phenomenal job, but I want to get your thoughts on him as a coach and him as a leader of men here at BYU.
Well, you talk about leadership with being an independent in COVID. They didn't have to worry about what the conference said.
Yeah.
They could set their own standards. So they set the highest level of medical standard, and then they moved forward. And in doing so, they showed a lot of other conferences and programs how to play football during COVID in a way that's safe. And I think that leadership didn't just come from the coaching staff. It also came from the locker room. And really the Built for Life program that you see now has its foundation in what those players in the locker room did during COVID in this last year. I also think he's building a Power 5 program here.
Well, they're certainly playing a Power 5 schedule. So.
Right, but a Power 5 style program. One of the things that defines that is, are you a pipeline to the NFL? And for goodness sake, they've got 12 guys from last year's team in NFL camps this summer, five of them drafted, including the number two pick in the draft. So that is improving. That's important. Another thing that's important is how do they replace those guys? And typically, a school that recruits kind of like BYU will have a big drop-off. Well, you don't get better sending 12 guys to the league, right? But then again, maybe you do, because BYU is going to replacing most of those guys with players that, for the most part, have started a lot of games, played a lot of games, have a lot of experience, a lot of confidence, and that's what top Power 5 conferences do. They lose guys to the league, but they've got enough depth that they've got good competition, so the guys that replace them are ready to go. And BYU is building that. Now, fans need to be a little careful about how they evaluate success, because they're going from no Power 5 opponents to seven this year. But at the same time, I think Kalani Sitake and his staff are doing a fantastic job of keeping the trajectory going upwards in terms of their recruiting and in terms of what they offer to players, which will improve recruiting down the road, and building what amounts to the style of program that you would see in a Power 5 conference.
Trevor, always good to catch up with you. Thanks for your time. And it's always good to get your perspective. Love your insight. Love your analysis. And keep it rolling. Look forward to catching up again maybe next year.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Thanks for having me on. You do a great job.
Appreciate it. That's Trevor Matich right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. We continue on live at BYU Media Day coming up next right here on the Zone Sports Network.